Sighting of the moon marked the beginning of the holy month of Ramadan. Around 1 million of the Ukrainian Muslims observed its arrival with a prayer and the fast breaking iftar.
Every day we will have another menu for iftar, for instance Tajik, Arabic and of course Ukrainian. Ukrainian Muslims are of various origin and everyone wants to present the national cuisine.
Ramadan is a month of prayer, fasting and charity. During this period, Muslims avoid from eating, drinking and smoking during the daytime. Thus, they show their devotion, self-discipline and faith. Though Ukraine has its native Muslim population, there are also a number of Muslim communities from other countries. Each of them brings some of their own culture, thus creating a remarkable atmosphere of Ramadan in Ukraine. During the holy month, the Ukrainian Muslim communities invite guests from abroad to deliver lectures on Quran and the life of Prophet Muhammad.
Since my first day in Ukraine, I have been treated nicely. While the first prayer, I've noticed that Muslims in Ukraine are very solid and Islam here is on the rise.
The Ukrainian society year by year is getting used to Ramadan traditions, says the Ukrainian Olga Kopan.
A lot of people understand that Muslims are fasting and they try not to eat in front of us. They understand that it may cause hunger among those who are fasting. However, in summer I feel more thirsty than starving.
Meanwhile, Ramadan in Ukraine has its particularities. The daylight length in the country may climb up to 18 hours. Along with the high humidity of the climate, it makes people feel the heat. However, the Ukrainian Muslims say these conditions are strengthening the spirit.
In Saudi Arabia, the sun sets earlier than in the Ukraine. However, the Muslims of Ukraine are sure that they will get more blessings for their patience.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir. La ilaha illallah. La ilaha illallah.
Welcome back, dear listeners, in continuation to what we were saying, which was a very interesting discussion about how the body needs food in order to grow and progress, and so does the soul. The soul needs spiritual food in order to grow spiritually and in order to progress upon this path of ubudiyyah. The second thing that we wanted to talk about on the program, dear brothers and sisters, in this holy month of Ramadan, where the Satans are chained and their work in order to deceive humanity becomes much more difficult, is the idea of how do we get rid of shaitans and the shayateen's intrusions. Now, of course, a preliminary step to having sincerity is to get rid of Shaitan's intrusions and his deceptions and his distractions. And this cannot really be brought about unless the spiritual wayfarer, the salik, as it is said, is in the quest of Allah in his spiritual wayfaring. So if we want to get rid of Satan's intrusions, our niyya, our goal, our primary mission and our quest is to attain Allah. Another thing which helps us to get rid of Satan's intrusions is to tread upon selfishness and self-conceit. We must destroy the aspect of selfishness and greed and jealousy and self-conceit and pride and arrogance. All of these are the origins of evil and they are inner diseases which help shaitan to intrude upon us, to control upon us, and to destroy us on our quest of ubudiyyah. And so these are the things that we must do, which it is easier to do in the holy month of Ramadan, for Allah is blessing us more so in this holy month than in any other month. Tread upon selfishness and self-conceit and arrogance and pride and jealousy and greed, so that we can get rid of the intrusions and deceptions and the distractions of the shayateen. And of course, remember, this is the best month so that we can spiritually grow and we can progress upon our path of ubudiyyah, our servitude and our worship and our obedience to Allah.
رمضان المستبين جاء بالنور المبين مرحبا بالتائبين مرحبا بالعابدين في صلاة الخاشعين في رحاب الذاكرين رمضان 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 القانتين.
And now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
When we talk about fasting, we don't want to think that fasting is just not eating and not drinking. No. When we look at the ahadith of the Ahlul Bayt, and we're talking now about closing the gap, getting ready for the return of the Imam of the time, what do we have to do? What does God want from us? We talk about that, we find out that fasting, when we look at the hadith of the Ahlul Bayt, is much more than just refraining from eating and drinking. We have a hadith about it. إِنَّ الصِّيَامْ لَيْسَ مِنَ الطَّعَامْ وَالشَّرَابْ وَحْدَهْ from Imam Sadiq. Not just not eating and not drinking. Actually, there's a story the Imam relates from the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. What happened was, the Prophet noticed that there was a woman and he heard her swearing at, using foul language with her servant, a slave girl who belonged to that woman. Servant, somebody worked in her house, for instance. He noticed the woman was using foul language, tasubbuh. So the Prophet, after that, they said he offered her some food. He's like, Bismillah, Bismillah, have some food, eat. And the woman was like, well, no, I'm fasting. So you're fasting? You're using foul language? You're fasting? Then he explained those same words. Fasting is not just about refraining from eating and drinking. Brothers and sisters, this month, we want to talk about what are the practical sides to Islamic spirituality. Practical irfan, practical akhlaq. What do we have to do? The hadith of the Ahlul Bayt tell us that it's not just about that. Again, the words of Imam Sadiq. He says, فَإِذَا صُمْتُمْ when you're fasting, he says, after that, protect and guard your tongues. We don't want to just say any sort of thing. Our tongues need to be fast. Lying, backbiting, accusing people falsely, riba, creating tension. We don't want to be doing any of that. More than that, what else the Imam tells us? He says, your eyes are supposed to be fasting. There are certain things that are forbidden for us to see. We're not supposed to be looking at those things. Also, while we're fasting, the eyes fast. So what we're talking about is that comprehensive fast, avoiding all of the muharramat, avoiding all of those sins, and trying our best to get close to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. The Imam continues, he says, not fighting, not quarreling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we're practicing Muslims, but then the manner of dealing with people, the method which I use, even if I'm on the right path, the method I use is not exactly something that God likes.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode and another great tip, Fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
لا إله سواه لا تخالطه الظنون ولا العيون تراه الله جل في علاه هو أنسي وملاذي أحتمي بحماه حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل نعم المولى ونعم النصير
يوسف جلالي بتهران
Rubashavit Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Puraza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Millions of EU citizens are really starting to feel the pinch. Inflation in the 19-country eurozone is currently at 7.5%. The European Central Bank, ECB, wants inflation to be at just below 2%. It means the cost of living is out of control.
The impact of the war on the economy will depend on how the conflict evolves, on the effect of current sanctions, and on possible further measures.
On Thursday, the ECB said energy prices have increased by 45% in the past 12 months. Business and consumer confidence has fallen through the floor due to the conflict in Ukraine and sanctions against Russia. There are major supply issues. The cost of living is rising, but wages are not, according to the ECB. We have been speaking to EU citizens.
We have also a lot of refugees in Poland, so it's also a huge problem now for our country, for the healthcare system and every other area.
We have to take the car, we're trying to take everybody at the same place and try to share with other peoples, and of course everything in the food also, I mean it's a big problem, yeah.
When I drive with a car or something and the prices went so high, as a student I cannot pay it.
If the Ukrainian conflict continue, there will be problem because Russian and Ukraine are two of the most important food producers, so there will be problem about food price.
And as a business person, are you worried about losing your business?
Yeah, it's stopping if you don't have the parts to construct your thing.
The next update from the European Central Bank is scheduled to take place on the 9th of June. So how badly could things possibly deteriorate for EU citizens between now and then? To quote the head of the bank, Christine Lagarde, who knows? Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Memorial service held to pay tribute to a major figure in the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, late Lieutenant General Mohammad Hejazi. Hejazi was the deputy commander of the IRGC's Quds Force, which is in charge of conducting overseas operations. The top general died last year after years of battling the effects of exposure to chemical agents in Iraqi gas attacks during the 1980s Iran-Iraq War.
General Hejazi was on the front line of the fight against the occupying Israeli regime. He was highly skilled in scouting for and training members of the resistance. The likes of General Hejazi and General Soleimani trained many resistance members who have turned into flag bearers of the resistance axis.
Hejazi's name goes hand in hand with Major General Qasem Soleimani, an anti-terror military commander who was assassinated in a U.S. air raid in Iraq in January 2020. IRGC officials say Hejazi stood shoulder to shoulder with General Soleimani in the fight against Daesh terrorists in Iraq and Syria.
When it comes to the fight against Daesh terrorists, General Hejazi played a key role in training the resistance fighters both physically and ideologically to readily fight the terror group. He led several operations that dealt heavy blows to the terrorists.
General Hejazi joined the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps during the early days of its establishment in 1979. He was a veteran of the eight-year Iraqi-imposed war on Iran in the 1980s, before being appointed as the head of the Basij, a paramilitary force affiliated to the IRGC. Hejazi also served as an intelligence and security advisor to Iran's leader, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei. He became the deputy commander of the Quds Force in late January 2020, after the U.S. assassination of General Soleimani. He was on the list of the U.S. and Europe sanctions as part of bans imposed on the IRGC.
From serving in the Iran-Iraq war in the 1980s to fighting terrorism in the region, General Hejazi grew to become a vital piece in the IRGC's activities, so that the military force still mourns his death as a huge loss. That's, quote, irreplaceable. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
A hearing to review the case of a Palestinian prisoner has been held at an Israeli court. After the hearing, the court said Ahmad Manasra's case doesn't apply under terrorism laws. This means his lawyers can appeal for his release. Mona Kandil reports from Ramallah.
Ahmad Manasra, this Palestinian youth, who was arrested 6 years ago when he was only 13 years old, is suffering mental health issues due to torture and solitary confinement he faces in Israeli jail. Ahmad's lawyers had appealed to the Israeli court against a special prison committee's rejection of a request to have Ahmad's case reviewed by a parole committee after he had served two-thirds of his sentence. The Israeli court of Bir al-Sabah held a hearing to review Ahmad's case. They only decided that his case doesn't come under the terrorism law.
Ahmad Manasra is an example of the persecution of children in Palestine. He's a child who was arrested while he was 13 years old only. He was persecuted, he was oppressed, he was tortured, and he was frightened, and he has become a victim of physical and psychological abuse from the Israeli side. That's why there is a huge campaign now demanding his release.
After years of his detention, no one can forget the video of an Israeli interrogator violently questioning a Palestinian child. In the video, Israeli interrogator kept screaming at Ahmad and accusing him of lying. Ahmad repeatedly told the interrogator that he couldn't remember. Ahmad was referring to the day when Israeli settlers opened fire at him and left him bleeding on the ground after being run over by an Israeli settler's car. Israeli settlers cursed him, damning him to death. This came after his 15-year-old cousin Hassan was shot dead by Israeli settlers. They accused both Ahmad and Hassan of attempting to carry out a knife-stabbing attack.
The Israeli committee originally rejected looking into Ahmad Mansara's file on the basis that its case falls under the terrorism law. Now, after the latest ruling, Ahmad's lawyers want to request to have his case reviewed by a parole committee. He has served 6 of his 9-year sentence and is suffering from mental health issues.
A global solidarity campaign has pressured the Israeli courts to hold a hearing to review and possibly appeal Ahmad's case.
The Israeli court has only decided to cancel the previous decision that Ahmad Manasra's case comes under the so-called terrorism law. However, Ahmad's family and lawyers hope that the next session will be soon, as there is a serious need to release Ahmad immediately due to his severely deteriorated mental condition. Mona Kandil, Occupied Ramallah.
Boris Johnson and Rishi Sunak are fighting for their political lives. This after it emerged both men were amongst dozens to receive fines from the Met for their part in Partygate, the series of gatherings that took place during the height of COVID restrictions in and around the corridors of British power. Labour leader Keir Starmer led the chorus of voices urging them to go.
But the guilty men are the Prime Minister and the Chancellor. They've dishonoured all of that sacrifice. They've dishonoured their office. This is the first time in the history of our country that a Prime Minister has been found to be in breach of the law. And then he lied repeatedly to the public about it. Britain deserves better. They have to go.
The Chancellor has issued a statement giving his unreserved apologies over the matter. The Prime Minister, however, attempted an explanation of sorts.
There was a brief gathering in the cabinet room shortly after 2 p.m., lasting for less than 10 minutes, during which people I work with kindly passed on their good wishes. And I have to say, in all frankness, at that time, it did not occur to me that this might have been a breach of the rules. But of course, the police have found otherwise, and I fully respect the outcome of their investigation.
Johnson's critics feel the Prime Minister not only failed the British people with his leadership during the peak of COVID, but continued to do so with these fresh revelations.
I'm stunned.
In all British history, no Prime Minister has ever been fined by the police before. And this is a law he introduced, that we all spent 2 years basically in self-isolation, and he's just having not just one party, but about a dozen of these parties. And for somebody who makes the law, who is our Prime Minister, to then break it so many times, he shouldn't just be resigning from office. He should be going to prison.
The support being shown to the Prime Minister and the Chancellor will be of cold comfort to those who lost loved ones during COVID. And the apologies of both men will ring hollow to those who managed to make the ultimate sacrifice and who are now wondering why those who made the rules seemed incapable of following them. Amina Taylor, London.
It's the second time in 7 months that Iraqi Foreign Minister Fuad Hussein has visited Tehran. The Iraqi diplomat's trip came upon an invitation by his Iranian counterpart, Hossein Amir Abdullahian. The two-hour talks were held behind closed doors, but from what the joint presser suggests, regional security topped the discussions.
We appreciate the role played by the Republic of Iraq in maintaining regional understanding. We also talked about Syria and expressed our opposition to the fact that parts of Syria are still occupied by military bases of other countries without seeking permission from Syria's central government. We also talked about Afghanistan. Iran and Iraq welcome an all-inclusive government in Afghanistan that encompasses all ethnic groups.
Iraq has been mediating talks between Tehran and Riyadh over ways to resume diplomatic ties between the two regional rivals. After more than 5 years of icy relations, Iran and the Arab Kingdom stand on opposition sides in the Saudi war on Yemen, which has been ongoing since 2014, with Iran calling for a ceasefire. The Iraqi foreign minister says a fifth round of talks due in mid-March was suspended, calling on both sides to quickly resume the discussions.
Iraq and Iran's security is tied to the security of the region, so Iraq will continue to play its part as a mediator for dialogues between Iran and Saudi Arabia to hopefully bring the two countries back to diplomatic relations.
The Iranian foreign minister, for his part, thanked Baghdad's constructive role in brokering the Saudi-Iranian talks, saying Tehran is ready to come back to the negotiating table.
We thank efforts made by the Honorable Prime Minister and Foreign Minister of Iraq to resume Saudi-Iranian talks. We welcome this initiative. When it comes to the Saudi war in Yemen, we believe that a sustainable ceasefire, the removal of the humanitarian blockade, and a Yemeni-Yemeni discussion without any foreign intervention could help the Yemeni people decide their fate.
Iraq and Iran are close political and security partners. This partnership was best manifested during the fight against Daesh terrorists in Iraq, when Tehran helped dislodge the terror group there. But when it comes to trade ties, both sides agree that they need to do more, putting the current bilateral trade volume between the two countries at roughly $14 billion. The two sides now agree to take steps to at least double this figure. Tehran and Baghdad's ties are basically defined by security cooperation. But let's not forget that Iraq was among the countries that maintained their economic cooperation with Tehran in the peak of U.S. sanctions on Iran. Now, this last visit is seen as another step forward in the two sides' trade and security cooperation. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Uncertain times for millions of Brits. A sharp spike in the cost of living combined with stagnant pay rates mean many are counting the pennies and being forced into making stark choices.
I've got a broken back right now with metal screw and bone in my back. And the pain with the arthritis I've got is horrible. And the cost of living, of electric and gas and petrol and food, is horrible. You know what I have to do? Go from shop to buy cut price things which is on sale.
There's going to be people out there that are too afraid to switch on a kettle for some hot water. You know, that kettle is going to cost me 46p to boil. No. No one should be living like this. This isn't the Stone Age. I'm not going down a mine this afternoon. This is 2022.
The signs for British householders have been ominous. Interest rates hitting a record high of 6.2% early this year, supply issues associated with Brexit, the global impact of COVID, a spike in energy costs, the crisis in Ukraine, and a hike in national insurance contributions have all contributed. Food bank use amongst working people has hit record highs, with ever more falling into debt, according to published figures. There's a growing sense of frustration and desire to cast blame.
What the government is doing, the government has to look into this matter. They should think that what the common people will do, what they will do, they cannot survive in this country.
I'm appalled that we are left in this situation. We've just came through 2 years of COVID, and now, by the way, people, here you go, energy cap. It feels like the government is like, oh, well, you've just came through hell. Here's a little bit more.
The terrifying reality is that for millions of Brits, this is simply the beginning. Flash forward a few months when temperatures would have plummeted and savings, if any, depleted. We'll start to see a real rise in half-empty fridges and bare cupboards and a growing sense of desperation, despair and anger. Boris Johnson's government says it's doing more than any other administration to lift Brits out of poverty. On recent evidence, there will be millions who wholeheartedly disagree. Amina Taylor, London.
As a neighboring country, Iran has always been a second house for Afghans. Over 5 million Afghan refugees are living in Iran today. Following a stabbing attack at Imam Reza Shrine in Mashhad that left two clerics dead, the Afghan society condemned the move, extending messages of solidarity and sympathy with the Iranian people.
The Islamic Republic of Iran has been a kind host to millions of Afghan refugees for more than four decades. Iran provides our Afghan legal and illegal refugees with jobs as well as educational, medical and other facilities. I wish Iranians enjoy peace and condemn any attack on their country, as it has served as a second home for Afghan people.
I extend my deep condolences to the Iranian people over the barbaric attack on a number of clerics at Imam Reza Holy Shrine. Not only me, but also the whole Afghan nation were saddened after the attack. The enemies of Islam and the two nations are pushing conspiracies to sow sedition, but we won't let anyone to ruin our solidarity.
Afghans also echo Iran's voice against enemies' plots and Cold War. Experts say neither the knife attacker in Mashhad represents Afghans, nor allegations of Iran mistreating Afghan refugees are true. They believe enemies of the two nations are using the media to sow discord.
The Mashhad incident that left two clerics dead was orchestrated by Takfiri groups and the enemies of Iran and Afghanistan. We should be aware that how they are trying to target our friendship. The stabbing attacker never represents the Afghan people, but it was meant to push Afghanophobia in Iran. On the other hand, the West is sowing Iranophobia in Afghanistan by fake viral pictures, while we know that Iran is generously hosting Afghan refugees.
This comes as the two nations are expanding relations in different political, cultural, and economic areas. The two neighboring countries, Iran and Afghanistan, have long been close partners. People here thank Iran for peacefully housing millions of Afghan refugees. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Families of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails and prisoners' rights activists held a sit-in outside the office of the International Committee of the Red Cross in Gaza. They protested Israel's inhumane treatment of thousands of Palestinian political prisoners. Palestinian prisoners see no end in sight to their suffering, as hundreds of them are being held without charge under the so-called administrative detention, where incarceration periods can be renewed indefinitely. According to Palestinian human rights groups, the Israeli regime has issued over 50,000 administrative detention orders against Palestinians, including women and minors, since 1967.
My message for the international community is that they must put their efforts against the policies of Israel that result in suffering of our prisoners, and we wish freedom for them and all the prisoners.
According to the Commission of Detainees and Ex-Detainees Affairs, Palestinian prisoners are subjected to harsher treatment in Israeli detention centers during the holy month of Ramadan.
During the month of holy Ramadan, the Israeli occupation deprived the Palestinian detainees from organizing the collective prayers like Taraweeh and Fajr prayers. And also the food is not enough. They provide the meals with bad quantity and quality.
Solidarity with Palestinian prisoners has been a top priority for activists in Gaza, who say they are determined to stand by the prisoners for as long as it takes.
According to prisoners' advocacy groups, thousands of Palestinians, including around 500 administrative detainees, are behind bars in Israeli jails. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hossein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we would like to examine a very important and pertinent question. And that question is about the etiquettes of the recitation of the Holy Quran. As you know, this is the month of Ramadan. And, you know, the month of Ramadan is a month in which the Quran was revealed. We have been asked to recite the Quran as much as we can in this holy month. And so this question is very pertinent for us today and in the time that we're in. So we can categorize the etiquettes of the recitation of the Holy Quran into two categories. There are certain apparent physical etiquettes, apparent etiquettes, and then there are certain spiritual etiquettes as well. And both of them, you know, you should be taken into consideration when reciting the Holy Quran. One of the etiquettes, let's start with the apparent etiquettes and see if we can finish them and get to the spiritual etiquettes as well. One of the basic etiquettes of recitation of the Holy Quran is what we call taharat or ritual purity. And that is that, you know, if we want to, obviously, it's true that if you don't touch the actual words of the Holy Quran, then it's not necessary to be in a state of ritual purity, meaning being in a state of having wuzu, not being, in a state of janabat and these kind of things. But if we are required to touch it, yes, this is a requirement. But if we want to reap the spiritual, you know, benefits of the whole recitation, yes, we should be in a state of taharat, you know. One of the other etiquettes of the recitation of the Holy Quran is what we call isti'aza. Isti'aza means that we seek refuge in God from the insinuations of the devil and shaitan before we begin the recitation of the Holy Quran. Right, for example, we read the following in the Holy Quran: فَإِذَا قَرَعْتَ الْقُرْآنَ فَاسْتَعِذْ بِاللَّهِ مِنَ الشَّيْطَانِ الرَّجِيمِ. This is a famous verse of the Holy Quran. When you want to recite the Holy Quran, take refuge in God from the accursed, which is Satan. Right? So this is the second etiquette of the Holy Quran. Right, these are two of the very apparent etiquettes of the Holy Quran. Now let's turn to a little bit about, look at the spiritual etiquettes of the Holy Quran. One of the basic spiritual etiquettes is paying attention to the Holy Quran, having our heart present. Right, as we say in Arabic, the qalb or the heart should be hadir, it should be present, right? How do we know that our heart is present? When we reflect on the Holy Quran, we do tadabbur on the Holy Quran, and we think about its verses, right? Which is basically the purpose of the Holy Quran, because God Almighty says, kitabun anzalnahu ilayka mubarakun layadabbaru ayateh. The purpose of the Holy Quran, God Almighty says, this is the book which we revealed to you, meaning the Prophet. It's blessed so that the people may reflect on it. Right? So reflection and thinking about the Holy Quran, doing tadabbur and thinking about it, is another etiquette and a requirement of reflecting on the Holy Quran. So we shouldn't try to do it this month of Ramadan. Let's see how many Qurans we can finish in this month. That's not necessary. Rather, we should try to, when we recite the Holy Quran, it doesn't matter how many verses we recite, but we should, the ones we recite, we should think about and reflect upon them while we are reciting them. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the etiquettes of reciting the Holy Quran in the light of the Holy Quran's verses. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Limelight. New research has prompted warnings that humanity is financing its own extinction through subsidies damaging to the climate and wildlife. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian journalist Patrick Greenfield. The piece is titled, "World Spends $1.8 Trillion a Year on Subsidies That Harm Environment," study finds. The world is spending at least $1.8 trillion every year on subsidies, driving the annihilation of wildlife and a rise in global heating, according to a new study, prompting warnings that humanity is financing its own extinction. From tax breaks for beef production in the Amazon jungle to financial support for unsustainable groundwater pumping in the Middle East, billions of pounds of government spending and other subsidies are harming the environment, says the first cross-sector assessment for more than a decade. This government support, equivalent to 2% of global gross domestic product or GDP, is directly working against the goals of the Paris Climate Accord and draft targets on reversing biodiversity loss. The research on explicit subsidies found, effectively financing water pollution, land subsidence, and deforestation with state money. The authors of the new report, who are leading subsidies experts, say a significant portion of the $1.8 trillion could be repurposed to support policies that are beneficial for nature and a transition to net zero emissions amid growing political division about the cost of decarbonizing the global economy. The new report calls for governments to agree a target to eradicate environmentally harmful subsidies by the end of the decade at the biodiversity COP15 gathering in China later on this year, where it is hoped a Paris Agreement for Nature will be signed, and for companies to reveal the subsidies they receive as part of environmental disclosure reporting. Cristiana Figueres, who was head of the United Nations Climate Change Convention when the Paris Climate Accord was signed, welcomed the new research. She said the subsidies were creating huge risks for the businesses receiving them. Nature is declining at an alarming rate, and we have never lived on a planet with so little biodiversity, Cristiana Figueres said. She added, harmful subsidies must be redirected towards protecting the climate and nature rather than financing our own extinction. The fossil fuel industry, with $620 billion, the agricultural sector with $520 billion, the water industry with $320 billion and forestry with $155 billion account for the majority of the $1.8 trillion, according to the new report. No estimate for mining, believed to cause billions of dollars worth of damage to ecosystems every year, could be derived. Lack of transparency between governments and recipients means the true figure is likely to be much higher, as is the implicit cost of harmful subsidies. Last year, an International Monetary Fund report found the fossil fuel industry benefited from subsidies worth $5.9 trillion in 2020. But the vast majority of this figure comes from the hidden costs of failing to make polluters pay for the deaths that they cause and for global heating. Douglas Koplow, founder of the organization EarthTrack, which monitors environmentally harmful subsidies, and a co-author of the new report, along with Ronald Steenblick, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development's former special counselor for fossil fuel and subsidy reform, said, "Subsidy reform allows us to improve the price signal so that we're not protecting income in more polluting industries. It creates space for alternative and cleaner forms of energy to enter the marketplace." A draft target in the United Nations Biodiversity Agreement for this decade calls for $500 billion a year in subsidies to be reformed. But the B Team and Business for Nature, which supported the new research, have said this must be strengthened. The world has never met a target on halting biodiversity loss, and the failure to act on subsidies was highlighted as a major issue from last decade's targets. Eva Zabi, executive director of Business for Nature, said businesses were often unaware of the extent of explicit and implicit subsidies that they benefited from, but could use their influence to call for change. Eva Zabi added, "Many businesses are benefiting from these environmentally harmful subsidies. This cannot be a taboo topic. We need to speak using facts and understand where the financial flows are going." She added, "Typically, the subsidies were established with good intentions in mind. We need to level the playing field because right now, some are benefiting from a head start when it should be the other way round. It's a wicked problem." Last year, a United Nations report found almost 90% of subsidies given to farmers every year are harmful, damaging people's health, fueling the climate crisis, destroying nature, and driving inequality by excluding smallholder farmers. Elizabeth Marema, the United Nations biodiversity head, said the new report was critically important. Elizabeth Marema added, The report highlights how redirecting, repurposing, or eliminating subsidies could make an important contribution to unlocking the $711 billion required each year to halt and reverse the loss of nature by 2030, as well as the cost of reaching net zero carbon emissions, she added. The world has failed to meet a single target to stem the destruction of wildlife and life-sustaining ecosystems in the last decade, according to a devastating new report from the United Nations on the state of nature. From tackling pollution to protecting coral reefs, the international community did not fully achieve any of the 20 Aichi biodiversity targets agreed in Japan in 2010 to slow the loss of the natural world. It is the second consecutive decade that governments have failed to meet their targets. The Global Biodiversity Outlook 5, published before a key United Nations summit on the issue later this month, found that despite progress in some areas, natural habitats have continued to disappear. Vast numbers of species remain threatened by extinction from human activities, and $500 billion of environmentally damaging government subsidies have not been eliminated. Six targets have been partially achieved, including those on protected areas and invasive species. While governments did not manage to protect 17% of terrestrial and inland water areas and 10% of marine habitats, 44% of vital biodiverse areas are now under protection, an increase from 29% back in 2000. About 200 successful eradications of invasive species on islands have also taken place. The United Nations said the natural world was deteriorating, and failure to act could undermine the goals of the Paris Agreement on the climate crisis and the Sustainable Development Goals. The head of the United Nations Biodiversity, Elizabeth Marema, said humanity was at a crossroads that would decide how future generations experience the natural world. Elizabeth Marema added, "Earth's living systems as a whole are being compromised, and the more humanity exploits nature in unsustainable ways and undermines its contributions to people, the more we undermine our own well-being, our own security and prosperity," she added.
Stories from the past. Stories from the lives of the infallibles. Stories from different parts of the world. On the Lantern.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dear listeners of this program, Lantern, thank you very much for joining us. The title of today's story in this part is The Mouse and the Weasel. A little hungry mouse found his way one day into a basket of corn. He had to squeeze himself a good deal to get through the narrow opening between the strips of the basket. But the corn was tempting and the mouse was determined to get in. When at last he had succeeded, he gorged himself to bursting. Indeed, he became about three times as big around the middle as he was when he went in. At last, he felt satisfied and dragged himself to the opening to get out again. But the best he could do was to get his head out. So there he sat groaning and moaning, both from the discomfort inside him and his anxiety to escape from the basket. Just then a weasel came by. He understood the situation quickly. "My friend," he said, "I know what you've been doing. You've been stuffing. That's what you get. You will have to stay there till you feel just like you did when you went in. Good night, and good enough for you." And that was all the sympathy the poor mouse got. Greediness leads to misfortune. And now the continuation of Lantern. Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim wa bainastain. In this episode, we are going to talk about the reasons of the causes of being greedy in human beings. As we know, most people find themselves to be really greedy, greedy of everything, greedy of eating, greedy of collecting money, accumulating money, or greedy of anything else. So in Islamic ethical and moral principles and instructions, this is intended, it's a discussion, it's a long discussion, how to stop one's own greediness. Certainly being greedy is a very unfavorable moral trait. This is because some people cannot restrain themselves and their own temporary feelings of having something. That's someone sees something and wants to have it, own it, and once own it, finds it really desirable for him or herself to have more and more of such things. It leads, little by little, it leads to people's developing a sense of greediness. And this sense of greediness, which is usually associated with some emotive feelings and emotions and, other moral traits, other unfavorable moral traits, all of them lead to uneasiness and creating problems for both the greedy person and other people. Usually in this regard, other people may suffer because once a person is greedy, he or she may want to have access to other people's properties. In the Holy Quran, it's indicated that some people have this sense of greediness regarding spreading whatever they hear. And according to Islamic instructions, one of instances of being described as a liar is that if someone repeats or recounts whatever he or she has heard anywhere else without having done any kind of research or investigation to find out the truth of the claim or the truth of the point already made, it means that, it indicates that this person must be or is a subject to being a liar because, he recounts something without having done any research on it adequately.
Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at a story which indicates a moral aspects of our life.
In the Holy Quran, in the Surah Al-Ma'idah, in verses 41 and 42, The Holy Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, in the Holy Quran indicates that some people want to recount lies, and I mean, without having researched, without having investigated the truth of the claims or the truth of the points already made. And this should be, I mean, this feeling should be restrained, because many a time we have heard something from here and there, but we've noticed that the claim was utterly false, and it was quite a very, an utterly baseless claim. In this connection, since there are many other unfavorable moral traits in almost all human communities, and those unfavorable moral traits include recounting lies or telling lies or spreading rumors or bribery, we find that, I mean, in the Islamic religion, people, I mean, in general, people have been advised, have been instructed to keep away from anywhere, these unfavorable moral traits may be found. At the same time, in the Surah Al-Hijr, verse 88 in the Holy Quran, it's indicated that, I mean, looking forward to grabbing other people's properties and feeling very jealous about other people's, I mean, belongings or other properties, I mean, people may have. This is, of course, I mean, these moral traits are really very abominable, and the Holy Quran advises people, not only Muslims, but all people, to keep away from these unfavorable moral traits. The same precept or the same wisdom is repeated in another way in the Surah Taha, verse 131. In the Holy Quran also, in the Surah Al-Muddathir, verses 11 to 15, in these verses, greediness with regard to having more financial power and having more, I mean, accumulating more wealth is regarded as an unfavorable trait. And because of this, it's because of this that people find it that they are entrapped. People find themselves entrapped by Satan, because this is, of course, a job or a character, a characteristic, a moral characteristic developed by Satan in people.
That was all for today. Thank you very much for joining us. Inshallah, we continue this topic on the next episode. Till then, may Allah bless all of you. Fi amanillah.
IRIB English Radio.